I'm Matt Wald, contractor for JS Advisors, supporting ICANN on the project, and I'll be kicking off today's session. With me today are Karen Lentz and Francisco Arias of ICANN, as well as Bill Yang of JS Advisors. Participation for this call is taking place through Adobe Connect at icann.adobeconnect.com/TMCH, where you can view the slides and enter the queue to ask questions. This call is being recorded. Now, just a few housekeeping items. We'd like to ask all participants on the call today to mute your phones. If your phone doesn't have a mute capability, you should be able to use *6 on your keypad to mute your line through our conferencing system. All participants should declare their interest when participating in the IAG proceedings. Follow-up will occur via email outside the call, and participants can use the distribution list for discussion, but please do try to adhere to the submission due dates for comments so that we can get them into our summaries in time for each meeting.
Matt, this is Karen. Can I add one point?
Sure, please do.
Just to advise everyone, first of all, that this call is being recorded, and then secondly, if I could remind everyone who hasn't already done so to return their statement of interest form. We have for a number of people, but not for everyone. So if you haven't sent yours in, please do that. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Karen. Today's agenda will include reviewing the highlights from the November 30th meeting and reviewing comments that we received for the two issues, P3 and P5, that are currently under discussion. I remind you, P3 is the issue that deals with the responsible party for sending the trademark holder registration notice, and P5 deals with the responsible party for performing the trademark claims check. We'll also be introducing one new issue today to be discussed on the January 13 call. At the end, we'll wrap up and remind you of a couple of key dates to be aware of for our next meeting. So just briefly, last call, which was on November 30, we summarized some of the consensus views for Sunrise Domain Registration Authorization, as well as the responsibility for presenting the registrant claims notice. And with respect to the use of codes for Sunrise Domain Registration Authorization, there was a discussion about whether a code represented an individual mark or mark holder. Now, we heard your concerns about burden on the mark holder. However, views did differ on that topic as, you know, what the extent of that burden might be. And so I think in the end, the actual implementation details are likely going to have to be considered to drive the final decision on that particular issue. For the registrant claims notice, we clearly heard the view that the process needs to be flexible enough to support multiple kinds of sunrises, which in turn could require either real-time or a time-shifted processing for notices to be sent. And then finally, we reviewed P3 and P5, and then we called for your written recommendations, which is the subject of this call. So P3 is the responsibility for the trademark holder registration notice, and the written comments and recommendations we received really kind of led to a majority view that the clearinghouse was the most appropriate entity to send claims notices to mark holders. There was a minority view that the registrar would be the better place, but it did seem that there was a fairly clear majority that the clearinghouse was the appropriate entity to send that notice. We also heard your comments and views that standardizing the notice text and the subject lines would increase the probability that they would go through. I think, you know, and not only for the mark holder notices, but by the way, also for potential registrant notices. And I think that was not only to get users accustomed to seeing the same kind of notice, but also to not fall into the spam filtering trap that sometimes notices can fall into. And then many did express a concern about the distribution of clearinghouse data, citing the potential for misuse and or abuse of that data. That is also a topic that's going to be taken up in the technical call that will happen today I'm trying to remember what that is, UTC. It's 3 hours from now.
Yes, it's 1600 UTC.
Thank you. So for the trademark holder registration notice, Karen, we had a question up here, I think, that we got that might be useful for us to address, and then we can transition into a brief discussion period on a couple of these issues. You mind taking us through that?
Okay, sure. And actually, before I do that, I was meant to add on the earlier slide with regard to the former issues. So P1 and P2 are the first set of issues that we've closed, quote, closed as in, we've ended the time period where we were asking for and looking at comments. So we've, collected everything we've gotten, and we're in the process of creating a synopsis of, the feedback that we got from this group on those issues and the analysis that took place. And we'll continue to do that throughout for the issues so that you get back, kind of the outcome of what the group's discussion was on that. So you'll see that on those two issues and going forward. And then also on these, this set of issues that we're into now, people continue to bring up terminology questions and point out inconsistencies, which is appreciated. I'm also in the process of creating a terminology document to reflect some of the terms that we agreed we didn't want to use and what appropriate terms would be. So you'll see that as well. As something that is resulting from this group's work. So, back to this slide, P3 had to do with the responsibility for the trademark holder registration notice, and there was a question in one of the comments about, as I understood it anyway, whether the notice would be triggered by, just by registration of a domain name or on every query, every time someone tries to query whether a domain name was available. And just to clarify that the service is intended to function such that it's the actual registration of a domain name which would trigger that notice. So that's the functionality that we're discussing today. The notice to, we discussed last time we met the notice to the potential registrant about the existence of a trademark record in the clearinghouse, and there was actually a draft notice developed during the early discussions on the clearinghouse concept that's part of the applicant guidebook and part of the clearinghouse model. For this notice, what notice that the trademark holder would get triggered by a domain name registration, that the elements that are contained in that and the text for that hasn't been discussed. So that's one of the questions that we're throwing out is what sort of information would be expected and useful to be in that notice. As well, people brought up in this context potential concerns for misuse or abuse of clearinghouse data somehow in the chain. So another of the questions that's posed here is you know, can we identify some of the specific scenarios for abuse that would be created by the clearinghouse or by these processes and the use of the information. So we'll open it up for any other comments that we got on the trademark or the notice to the trademark holder. Any other comments here?
Yeah, hi, this is Keith Bear. I just entered something in the chat, but I wanted to clarify since I see it wasn't too clear what my comment was. And
sure.
Just you mentioned that the notice goes to the domain name registrant. I just want to make clear that, you know, that's not the case. It goes to the domain name applicant. They're not yet the registrant.
Correct.
That's the whole point of the notice.
Correct.
That, you know, you get a notice saying, do you want to proceed to become a registrant?
Correct.
And so, as you may know, Karen, I'm always kind of a stickler for being, you know, careful with the terminology we use.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that we just, you know, keep those issues, you know, real clear about, you know, what you know, the true status of the parties are at what point the notice gets triggered.
Correct. That's absolutely right. The you know, they're a potential registrant or a
prospective registrant. I don't know why we don't just call them domain name applicants. To use the word registrant in any way to refer to these people before they have a registration, I think invites confusion. Let's call them domain name applicants. That's exactly what they are.
Okay.
Potential registrant invites confusion.
Hey, Karen, this is Jeff. I'm not on Adobe. Can I,
okay.
Jeff Newman?
Sure, just a second, Jeff. So you're right. I'm, you know, applicant is another way of terming it. Every name we come up with seems to be longer than we wish, and people sort of abbreviate it, but you're correct. There is a particular status of not quite having registered a domain name. That's what we're trying to capture. So I have Tom Barrett in the queue, and then Jeff.
Hi, this is Tom. I have a question about how quickly the trademark owner needs to be notified of an actual registration. It has to be within minutes, hours, days. What do other people think?
Okay, so we'll leave that for anybody who wants to respond. And Jeff?
Yeah, on that one, I mean, just to respond quickly, I think it's all dependent on how often the clearinghouse, if it's clearinghouse, it's going to send out the notice, how often they're able to download the zone file of the registry to figure out when those marks have been registered. So that's like a separate issue I think we need to talk about, and that's probably an issue you need to have conversations with the registries as well as the clearinghouse to see how often they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other point, I heard the comments from Keith. Right now we're talking about the notice to the trademark owner, not the notice to the domain name applicant. So we just need to make that clear. And I think the only information that should be given to the trademark owner is information that they can get from the zone file, unless the clearinghouse also wants to query everyone's who is database and put it all together. Because, you know, when they download the zone file, when the clearinghouse downloads the zone file from the registry, all they're going to get is the basic information of domain name, registrar, and name servers, and a couple other limited information that you find in the zone file. I don't think we should make it the burden of the clearinghouse then to go query the WHOIS record to then provide all of that data to the trademark owner. I think the trademark owner, once it has the domain name and the registrar, it can look up the WHOIS information for itself and find out the contact information.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. I have next John McElwain and then Tom Barrett.
I don't know if I'm getting out of order here. This is John McElwain, but I was going to address the first bullet point under the discussion period about what scenarios for misuse or abuse of clearinghouse data is possible.
Mm-hmm.
The trademark clearinghouse is going to be a unique animal currently sort of in this trademark sphere in that it's going to be a collection of trademark registration data from all over the globe. So there currently isn't any one source of that type of information, which I think is most brand owners' concerns. Now, on its face, that doesn't seem to be too problematic, but what we see as counselors for brand owners are a number of scams that get run off of this type of data. We're all familiar with the sort of Dear CEO letters. I probably get a question from a client almost on a weekly basis, very concerned, saying, you know, I just got this letter. It's indicating that somebody's going to register my brand in all of these other CCTLD spaces. Oh, my gosh, what should I do? That's what I kind of refer to as the Dear CEO letters.
Mm-hmm.
We also see unsolicited offers for services that are just really not necessary to brand owners that are sort of couched in a very official-sounding term. So it's no doubt that if third parties that are sort of unscrupulous can get a hold of this data, we're going to get they're going to get offers such as from the International Trademark Watching Society or something like that organization for, you know, a mere $100,000 to watch their trademark. It's going to be some ridiculous sort of offers like that. And then lastly, because it is this sort of international database, there would be competitive intelligence that could go on amongst competitors. So I think that's mainly the security concerns that some of the brand owners have.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Mm-hmm.
I had Tom next and then Francisco. Tom Barrett, are you there?
Yes, I am. Actually, Francisco may be making the same as me. I was just reacting to Jeff's comment about checking the zone file. And that may not work if the requirement is that the trademark owner gets the notice within minutes or hours as opposed to days. The zone file may only be updated once a day. So if a 24-hour time period is fine, then the zone file method might work, providing all the details of who is. Otherwise, the data would have to be passed some other way to the clearinghouse.
Okay. All right. Francisco?
Yes. So just to repeat what I said on the Adobe Connect chat, in case people are not there, that checking the zone file will not work also on the case where the name doesn't have DNS info. A way to get around this, an option to get around this will be that the clearinghouse gets a notice from the either from the registry or the registrar when the registration happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco.
This is Jeff. Can I be added to the queue? I'm sorry, I'm not on Adobe.
That's okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I think we should really stay away from that. I think it's going to be a real huge burden after every single registration, because remember, the registry is not going to necessarily know all the marks in the clearinghouse. So basically what you're saying is every single time there's a registration, the registry will have to communicate in some way to the clearinghouse. You know, so there could be, with the 1,500 registries all at once, you're talking about a lot of activity for the registry to have to notify every single time there's a registration. And frankly, I don't really see the need for a trademark owner to be updated every minute when there's a registration. I would think, you know, if they get a notice within a day or two after the registration, I would think that's sufficient. I can't think of any reason, and maybe some of the trademark owners on the call could speak to this, but I'd love to know a reason why a trademark owner needs to know within minutes of when a registration happens. Also, just on the notice of the abuse of the use, on the use of the data itself, I think we're also talking about here the potential abuse of trademark owners of getting registrant data. So we need to be concerned. I mean, I've heard the concerns right now. I've heard the concerns expressed only in terms of trademark owners, but let's talk about registrants and their data.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. I have next Christina.
Sorry, I just got on Adobe, so I'm going to be covering kind of a few things. First, in terms of Tom's question about the frequency within which or how quickly the trademark owner should be notified. I'm not necessarily convinced at this point that it needs to be minutes, but I also think it needs to be well under 24 hours. And I absolutely disagree with Jeff, that as someone who works very closely with trademark owners, some of whom have large internal anti-fraud units, it can make a huge difference to know 2 hours versus 24 or 36 hours as to whether there is a registration of a new domain name that matches a previously identified pattern that is indicative of fraud or other online abuse. Second, to just follow up on a point that John made, the other point that I would note in terms of the concern of trademark owners is having access, full access, or conversely being able to write a script that would continuously ping the clearinghouse mark by mark by mark by mark by mark will allow, could potentially allow third parties who want to sell that data to use it in such a way that they could effectively blackmail the trademark owner by securing protection in a market that the trademark owner is in and has started the process but has not yet gotten the registration and the like. And finally, I think the last point that I would note is that it would be helpful for me to hear more from Jeff as to how, maybe I'm missing something, but I'm not sure I understand how registrant data is going to get in the clearinghouse such that it could be abused. It could be that I'm missing something, but I'm just not getting it. And one last point is I thought I heard a beginning of the conversation, the gentleman from JAS saying that we needed to talk about the notice that went to trademark owners, and that's done. That's in the guidebook. At least that's what I thought it was in the guidebook. So if that's not the case, I think it would be helpful to understand what is still being considered with regard to that notice. Thanks.
I'm sorry, Christina, what was the last point that you said? You think that something is in the guidebook?
The notice that goes to the potential registrant, the domain name applicant, that notifies them of the match against the clearinghouse. So that's done.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay.
I was saying at the beginning of the call was that the notice to trademark holders once the registration takes place is not doesn't exist in draft form.
Oh, got it. I agree. Thanks.
Okay. All right. So I have Francisco next, and then Jeff, if you were asked a question, so if you'd like to respond, you can do that after Francisco.
Thank you, Karen. So about what Jeff was saying, and perhaps this was already covered by Christina, this is also something that is going to be discussed in the technical meeting a couple hours from now. The data access, there is a question where the registrar could be able to have a portion of the data at least in order to know what are the trademarks that are registered in the clearinghouse. So what I'm trying to say is the clearinghouse will be getting queries every time something is being registered. So I think in terms of the load, I'm not sure it's a big of a difference in terms of getting getting notice the clearinghouse on when something is registered. It will be on the same amount of load that it will be receiving. Well, actually, it will be even more load that it will be getting if the clearinghouse will be queried every time someone tries to register a domain name. And the other will be a question for Jeff. What is the scenario that he has in mind when he says that the information of the registrant could be abused or misused by trademark holders? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Okay, this is Jeff. On that question, since we're talking about the information that's contained in the notice that goes to the trademark owner, we're talking about registrant information, right? Because the name's already been registered, so it's a registrant. And we don't want, and one of the concerns that was raised all during the time talking about the claims, whether it was in the STI group or the IRT, was that we don't want these notices to have a chilling effect. And the chilling effect can be caused if a trademark owner gets a notice and uses that information to harass the registrant. We really think there's a duty of the trademark owner to do the appropriate diligence to make sure there's actual infringement or some sort of issue before contacting the registrant rather than just using the information to kind of harass the registrant, even if the registrant is using it for legitimate purposes. So, again, I'm not saying that they'll do that. I'm just saying that was a concern that was strongly expressed during all of the public comment periods and all of the work that these groups were doing. Again, I'm not saying I agree with one side or the other, but we just need to make sure that we're keeping those concerns in mind. And I know that was very strongly voiced by the non-commercial users. So that's the data I'm talking about, the data that's transmitted from the clearinghouse or whoever, or I guess if it's clearinghouse, from the clearinghouse to the trademark owner that contains registrant information. And the other point I want to make is, Francisco, I would not make the assumption that it's not a burden on registries to notify the clearinghouse every single time within seconds or minutes after a registration is made. I really think you need to pose that question to the registries and let them answer as to what they think the burden will be. I think it's dangerous to make an assumption. And I'd really like to pose a question back to Christina. I heard the general statement she made that it's really helpful to know things within minutes or within hours, but I'd like to see kind of the reasons in writing as to why, you know, what they can do within hours that they can't do within 24 hours, you know, trademark owners. Because remember, we're talking about a registration, so the data is not going anywhere. The one possible issue I could think of is that the ad grace period is 5 days. So if you can, as a trademark owner, contact the registrant and convince them of your rights and that the person's going to be infringing, they could delete within 5 days and get their money back, which also we'll need to talk about, Francisco, on a separate issue about sort of waivers of the anti-tasting or the ad grace period, right? Because if people delete because of legitimate reasons, you don't want the registrar to be penalized in the ad grace period for having more than 10%. So if we can note that issue for later. But in the end, Christina, as long as they have notice within a day, then there's still 4 days to work it out and still get a refund. So it would be real helpful if you can kind of document the reasons why, not only that you'd like to know within hours, but how really it's helpful knowing within hours as opposed to a day.
Actually, thanks. Karen, can I respond? Because frankly, Jeff, as I'm sure you understand, I'm going into the holiday period, so the less additional writing I have to do at the moment, the best. The difference in time really comes down to the fact that by the time the trademark owner receives the notification that the name has been registered, the domain name is live. And I think anybody who works in anti-fraud and anti-abuse can tell you that the scope of damage that can be done in 2 hours versus what can be done in 24 or 36 hours is just tremendous. And you know, and if that's something you need documentation of, you know, I'll send you some reports to McAfee or something. You know, I don't know what more information you need from us on that point.
Okay, thank you. I have next in the queue is Hong.
Hi, hello. Karen, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. The line for me was not very good, so I missed the first part. But to my understanding, if someone apply for a domain name that is identical with a trademark in the clearinghouse, the applicant may not be able to register that domain name eventually. Perhaps the registry may have some restrictive policy. Only if the applicant have received the notification from somewhere about the trademark clearinghouse information and determined to go ahead to register the domain name and eventually successfully register the domain name, the trademark owner will be notified. It's just, I want to verify whether my understanding is correct. So the trademark owner would not be notified actually at the process of domain name application. Only the domain name is registered, it will be notified. Is this correct?
Yes, that is correct. It's once the domain name is registered, the domain name applicant has received the notice saying, notice there are these rights that have been recorded in the clearinghouse. And they choose to proceed, then once the domain name is actually registered, that is what triggers the notice to the trademark holder.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Okay, I have Jeff next.
Yeah, just to clarify the record and just to respond to Christina, certainly we know the dangers of names being registered within minutes. But I think if you look at the record, and I've done a lot of studying of this, most of the names that are used for phishing, farming, malware, etc., are not names that match a trademark. They are names maybe that spoof a trademark, but the underlying name itself is not a match of the trademark. It's usually some nonsense characters. That's how they go undetected. It's much easier to do that. So I just want to clarify, just to kind of contrast, that, look, 90% of the names are, well, let me not count state figures, but a good majority of the names that we take down in the biz registry and the U.S. registry and the others that we support have nothing to do with a trademark. Even if it's used in phishing and it looks like the trademark, they're not actually the trademark. So I don't think we should really be overly concerned that a name matching a trademark is the one that needs to be taken down in a couple hours, because history hasn't really shown that. So I just want to clarify that. Thanks.
Okay. Jeff, I see your hand up. Was that from before, or did you have another comment?
I'm sorry. I was taking down my hand, but I realized you guys.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So thank you, everyone, for the comments. We have talked a bit about the timing of the notice and how to establish that. Certainly it's a requirement that it be a timely notice that would enable the trademark holders to take action based on that as soon as they can. There's a range of times that have been discussed. So. We will continue to explore that, as well as what the registry interface can feasibly do to support the most timely notice. And then we also discussed what potential concerns for abuse there are with regard to concerns of trademark holders that have data in the clearinghouse and the concern that was expressed earlier about potential misuse of registrant data by the trademark holders that receive notices. So all that feedback's been heard. And I think, Matt, if we're ready, we can move on to the next issue.
Sure. And is there anything we wanted to capture about information that would be contained in the notice, or do we want to move that on to the next session?
Well, did anyone have a comment on specifically what information should be in the notice? I think somebody commented on that.
Okay.
But if not, we'll look at that as well.
Okay. If any of you have any thoughts that you'd like to put in your written comments, certainly. It would be interesting to hear your views about what the notice content should be. Okay. P5, then, is the responsibility to perform the trademark claims check. And in the written comments and recommendations that we received, there was really a very strong view that the registrar is the most appropriate entity to check for claims. And, I think many held the view that this was really because it enhanced the speed of processing and it limited the distribution of data to unnecessary parties. So I guess unlike maybe some other topics, on this one there seems to be a fairly clear consensus. Aaron, and I just think maybe what we do is we ask the group if there are any other comments or views that need to be discussed on this topic, because it seems fairly clear. Does anybody have any comment on P5 before we kind of move on from it?
Tom?
So you're saying it's very clear that the registrar is the most appropriate place to check for claims. So by implication, the registry is not part of the process? Well, they do a direct check.
Can you say what you mean by a part of the process?
Is a registrar doing a query against the registry, or are they going directly to the clearinghouse?
Well, I guess it could happen both directions.
Right. Or the third one is they're checking some sort of cached or replicated copy.
Right. I have Jeff next.
Yeah, and I agree with the sentiment that's been expressed in the comments that the registrar is really in the best position to check for the claims. I just wanted also noted for the record, though, that the registry is contractually responsible for making sure that the checks take place and making sure that the domain name applicant is notified and then hits the, I want to proceed anyway. A note for ICANN is that we would like to make sure that, registries are held, are not responsible then for the actions of the registrars, since they're not the ones involved in the activity. And that ICANN have some sort of agreement with the registrars, it's part of maybe an addendum to the registrar accreditation agreement to do new TLDs, that they need to do this and that the ICANN can deal directly with the registrars. We don't want it to become the burden of the registries or the liability of the registries if all the actions are being done by the registrar.
Okay, so Jeff, is that with that concern stated, there's no other concern that the registry would have about the registrar, performing that function?
Well, I think you've heard from a majority of people that they think the registrar should perform the function. I think I do have some concerns on a personal level that. I'm a little worried about registrars that don't necessarily follow the rules or not even intentionally, but just, it's a pretty complex process. And then you have registrars all around the world dealing with different languages. So it's, obviously I do have some concerns because ultimately it's the brand of the registry that's going to be harmed if things don't operate right. I'm just not sure there's a solution to that.
Mm-hmm. Next, I have Tom Barrett.
Yeah, I have a question. I wonder how registries would feel, depending on how it turns out that trademark claims are paid for. The ICANN spec talks about the fact that registries and registrars would help pay for the clearinghouse. So presumably, and for trademark claims, it would be paid for from either registries or registrars. And so if depending on how we decide that happens, registries may or may not want to be involved in the process.
Okay, next I have Francisco.
Thank you, Karen. I just want to point out a comment that went out into the Adobe chat from Will, saying that if a name is not in the zone, the impact may be a lot less for the trademark owner. I just was wondering what other people in the call think. Is there a difference if the name is active in the DNS or not? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Francisco. Does anybody want to speak to that question? Is it does it make a difference for the trademark holder if a name is, you know, just registered and then not necessarily being actively used at that point, or whether it becomes an active entry in the zone? Christina is saying no on the chat. Hong?
Okay, I'm saying the title of this slide is Responsibility of Trademark Claim Checks. But what if the domain name applicant dispute the check? Well, it could be done by, say, registrars. If they disagree with the check, would there be a procedure to correct that? So it's different. It's not identical with the trademark. That's because according to the rules, not all the domain name applications would be exactly look like the trademark. So who should be responsible for that?
So thank you, Hong. The trademark claims service is essentially a notice. So the entity that receives the notice has the ability to decide what to do with that. So I think your question really goes to dispute resolution generally, because you wouldn't necessarily specifically dispute that notice, but there would potentially be a dispute resolution system around records that are in the clearinghouse, and if something is recorded there that maybe was not valid, or there's somehow it's being matched with things that matched with the entries incorrectly, that there would be a process to address that. And that's, I think, one a separate set of issues that we have as a topic for a later call. All right. Any other comments here on the registrar and the claim check? I'm looking back at my notes here. We've talked about, if the registrar is responsible for performing the function, the registry is the one contractually responsible. You need to think about how records or compliance investigations can be done. And then Tom also brought up the point about how the service is paid for, and that might have an impact on how the system works as well. Susan.
Yeah, I would like to go back to the question about whether or not the name is active in the zone file.
Uh-huh.
And my comment is that if a domain is initialed upon request for registration, or however you want to phrase it, is not active in the zone file, it may not matter to the trademark holder at the time, but if a potential malicious person registers the domain, chooses not to be active, and then like a month later goes active, who is going to be responsible to monitor and watch for whether or not that domain gets active? Is it the TM side, or is it now on the registry, or who, to make sure that the trademark now knows that the domain is active in the zone? And if that doesn't make sense, I can further clarify.
Yeah, I think if I understand the question. So the it's the registration, the act of registration itself that triggers the notice, not whether it becomes active in the zone. The distinction that people have been talking about is having to do with how quickly the notice needs to be there, and what are the sort of registry systems that need to be there to support it. But I think what your point is you know, from the trademark holder perspective, you know, just the fact that a name has been registered, whether anybody's using it in the first few hours or not, is still a concern and something that they want to be aware of. Is that correct?
That is correct. So that's why I want to make sure people are not expecting to only be sent.
Okay, thank you.
Domain is not active, so I agree. Thank you.
Okay. All right, thanks. Next I have Will Shorter.
Hi. Yeah, I think, you know, the suggestion on how to, you know, when to notify the trademark holder around the domain name being in the zone was really about, you know, the big impact seems, and I agree, can be around when the name gets into the zone and somebody's doing something to infringe, you know, so the world sees it. And so, you know, that information is public in the DNS itself. When the domain name goes into the zone, the question is how does the CMCH know about it so they can notify? And so, you know, whether that's querying a zone file or getting a notification, and then, you know, the question is how real-time does it have to be? And so I think a combination of some sort of asynchronous process to get the notification and looking at the zone file can get you to the big impact or getting there in time for any kind of big impact. So that was the only thing I'd like to add.
Okay. Thank you, Will. Okay, next in the queue I have John.
Karen, I think I heard you mention that you know, if we were going to have the registrar be responsible for performing the trademark claim checks, I should say, how are we going to deal with that from sort of a service level? And Jeff sort of mentioned this as well, and I think I would actually be on the other side, which is there has to be some level of accountability, and it probably needs to be at the registry, and if the registries are who are sort of selecting these registrars. And I didn't know if there's been that's to come later or if there's been any further sort of discussion on that point. So that's it.
Okay, thanks, John. I have Jeff next.
Yeah, just to respond to that, John, just so you know, a registry has to go with whatever registrar ICANN accredits and also meets, you know, any other objective criteria. The registry is not allowed, with some small exceptions, a registry is not really allowed to select and pick and choose which registrars it likes and doesn't like. So unless that requirement goes away, I think we can't really apply that logic. Registries cannot be held responsible if it doesn't have control. So if ICANN wants to do away with the requirement of equal access and requiring registries to go with every registrar that meets the accreditation criteria, then we could talk about it. But until then, we really can't hold the registries responsible for that.
And, Jeff, is that what's currently baked in, or are we just to the applicant guidebook, or are we just assuming that that's going to apply?
Well, I'll let Karen answer, but that's baked in.
Okay.
Yep. So, So many of the people who commented in the written comments said, you know, cited the, you know, it's the most efficient, probably the most timely for, you know, the registrar to do this. The concern, however, that's been noted here is the, you know, as John brought up, the service level. Is there a way to guarantee a consistent process across registrars that are all over the world? You know, one part of that is perhaps, you know, making it a very easy on the registrar end to be consistent, whether it's you know, designing an interface or something like that. But you know, certainly it does present some challenges in terms of how to establish accountability in the process, as someone phrased it. and to make sure that the, you know, the service does work as it was intended in that way.
And Karen, this is John again. Just, I think we also would need to note that we need to make sure that there's some sort of confidentiality obligations that those registrars have, so that we don't have any Dear CEO type scams being run. Not just to be careful, or you know, that data being sold or used in sort of improper purposes.
Right.
Thanks.
Yeah. So we'll we have as a whole, I think we have a whole call or more devoted to the topic of confidentiality type issues and data access. So we will we'll get into that in more detail as well. Any other further comments or questions on this topic? If not, I think we can continue, Matt.
Okay. The next issue that we're going to be taking up is one we're calling P4, which is the audit, logging, and compliance requirements. And here what we're really getting at is what your requirements, what the community's requirements are for retention, publication, and disclosure of clearinghouse information, including audit and logging trails. And I think, you know, we set aside a little bit of time today just to start the discussion here, and then, of course, we can formalize this in your written comments. But we'd really like to know from you today what some important events are for the clearinghouse to capture and to report on to ensure that there is compliance with applicable laws and regulations. And then secondly, what the community would really like to learn about IP protection through the use of this mechanism, through the audits and logging trails. So, Karen, I think if it's all right, it would be good to get some comments on these two topics now as an introduction to, you know, the written comments period that's coming up.
Sure. So we've got some time. So if anyone has a comment on to start off with on the topic of audits and logging and reporting and so forth, you can kick that off now. I have Jeff first.
I think one of the important things that we need to log and make sure that that's kept for a sufficient period of time, and maybe some of the attorneys on the call could weigh in, but we need to keep on file the acceptance of from a domain name applicant for moving forward once it's presented with the claim. So we need to actually, it's a couple elements. That's one, logging of the information that the applicant was actually presented the claim. Two is the actual logging of the actual acceptance by a domain name applicant. And I think we would need to keep that as long as, you know, kind of statute of limitations last on infringement-type lawsuits. And so maybe Christina can weigh in on that. You know, I would think that's probably 5 years would probably be most of the trademark, most of the statute of limitations. But I look to Christina and others for that.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. I have Tom Barrett next.
Yeah, just to follow on to Jeff's point, I think you need to be absolutely explicit about what it means to display the notice to the potential applicant. I know as a registrar, we have to display terms and conditions and a checkbox. We certainly don't force the registrars to read the terms and conditions. So I've heard several comments, both in writing and on the call, about whether or not displaying a link is sufficient, or if you have to display the complete notice. And obviously, I think that has to be explicit in terms of whether or not you want to require the full notice to be displayed or not.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Anybody else? A comment on this? Okay. If not, I think we can finish up, and we will have a period of time for follow-up on the issues we've discussed today, as well as a new opportunity to weigh in on the audit and logging compliance topic. Matt?
Okay. So there's going to be a final comment period for recommendations on P3 and P5, which we discussed today. We'd like to close that out by the 28th of December. Just as a reminder, we'd prefer that you don't resubmit your prior comments. We'd like you to send new recommendations you might have. And then for P4, the next meeting we have will not occur till January, so comments on P4 we have due for the 11th of January, which is 2359 UTC on the 10th. And, we'll have some information out for you on that one, and the other one's coming up, and we look forward to seeing you after the new year. That concludes today's call. Thank you, everyone, for your great comments and for your thoughts on these issues. That's it, Karen.
Okay, thank you, and thanks again to everyone. Really appreciate your participation in this group, and we will talk to everyone next year.
Thank you.